There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Real vinyl.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
WRCT in sound from way out.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Well, the pro-gun right has gone absolutely nuts after the assassination of the former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Now, the assassination itself is a major, major political story. It's been widely covered over the last 3 days, and there's not so much to add about that. It's a story of global significance and Japanese significance, etc. And most of what there is to say about that has been said. I want to focus on the reaction to this assassination, which was done with a firearm, from the pro-gun right in the United States, who has rallied around this assassination to say, look, gun control is strict in Japan, and a former prime minister was assassinated. And this proves that it doesn't matter what you do in terms of guns. This proves that restricting guns doesn't make a difference. And of course, they're completely wrong. And we're going to look at the data and we're going to make an empirical case for why that is. Now, just to sort of set the stage, what we have learned about this assassination, this is per NPR, political motivations have been denied by the shooter. He told police the attack had been planned for months. Abe was shot from behind in the western city of Nara while speaking at a campaign event. Police arrested Tetsuya Yamagami, a 41-year-old, at the scene. Yamagami, an unemployed former sailor in the Maritime Armed Forces of Japan, confessed to the killing, for which he used a handmade firearm, according to police. And that's an element of the reaction that we are hearing from many, which is, look, even if you restrict firearms completely to the point of making them illegal, people will just make them at home, and we're going to get back to that. But the most important top-line thing to understand is that although there has been a killing, this is, you know, last week we had this caller who said, David, why aren't anecdotes okay to understand the world around us? Anecdotes are our experience. And the point I made was, if you extrapolate from an anecdote, you often will be wrong. And the fact that someone was killed with a gun in Japan misses the reality that the rate of gun death in Japan is a fraction of what it is in the United States. The numbers are actually quite stunning. Two important bits of data. First of all, very few people own guns in Japan. And I think nobody denies that part. In the U.S., there's an estimate of 120 guns per 100 people. That's more than one gun per person in the United States. Whereas in Japan, it's 0.3 guns per 100 people. So that's the gun ownership rate. And then if you continue in looking at this BBC article, you see that gun deaths in Japan are extremely rare. In the U.S., there are 7 deaths by firearm per 100,000 people, whereas in Japan, it's 0.03. Japan's rate of gun death is a fraction. And in fact, the U.S. rate of gun death is 23,000% higher than the rate in Japan. That's not a typo. 23,000% higher. So then you go to, well, the person made the gun at home, so you can't prevent that. Well, imagine if the only way to shoot someone was to make the gun at home. Think about that. If you could, if that was really the way, if you wanted to shoot someone, you had to make a firearm in your house. Imagine how much lower gun violence would be, because most people aren't going to do that. Guns are not illegal in Japan. They're just much more difficult to obtain. And this has worked at making the gun violence, the gun death rate, almost zero. If to buy a gun in Japan, you need to take a firearms class, pass a written exam, which is only held 3 times a year. So you can't just say, well, I want it tomorrow. It's held 3 times a year. You've got to get a doctor's note saying you're mentally fit and have no history of drug abuse. You have to ask for a permit to do firing training. That can take a month. You have to be interviewed by police and explain why you need a gun. You have to pass a review of your criminal history and gun possession record, employment, involvement with organized crime, debt, relationships with friends, all these things. You then apply for a gunpowder permit. You take a 1-day training class, have to pass a firing test. At that point, you can get a certificate from a gun dealer describing the gun that you want. If you are trying to hunt, you have to get a hunting license to show I'm really getting this in order to hunt. You then have to get a gun safe and an ammo locker. The police have to inspect it and make sure that it's in compliance. You then do a final kind of overall background review. And after that, step 13 or 18, depending on whether you consider each of these things one or sometimes two things, then you can actually go and buy a gun. So the anecdotal reaction, this is the epitome of why anecdotes aren't useful. The anecdotal reaction is strict gun laws and there's a shooting. None of the gun laws work. The systemic empirical reaction is strict gun laws, very small rate of gun ownership. Guns aren't illegal, but all of this leads to a tiny, tiny rate of gun death in the country of Japan. Yes, a person was killed with a gun, and it was notable, and it was a known person because it's a former prime minister. It's like if Bill Clinton or George W. Bush were or Donald Trump were killed with a firearm. It is notable. It's major news. But the gun violence rate is nothing in Japan compared to that of the United States. And that really should be the big takeaway. So I was involved in a whole bunch of different Twitter spats as this was going on, with people saying this proves that you can't prevent gun violence. No, actually, this proves that you can. And in fact, this story is a major story in Japan, not only because of the person that was killed, the former prime minister, but because anyone was killed with a gun at all, because it is so rare in the entire country. And Japan has a large population. I think it's about 80 million. You have to adjust for that. It's smaller than the U.S., but that rate is tiny for a country with so many people. And in fact, let me just double check Japan population. 125 million, actually. So it's an even bigger country, making the number of gun deaths even smaller. That's the takeaway. Their policy has worked. Hey, this almost seems like a Saturday Night Live skit. Fox News is now warning there may be too many jobs, too many people might be working, and this could be a warning sign for the economy. How is that possible? Well, like with everything, with almost everything, there's sometimes like a kernel or a grain of truth somewhere up the chain in the analysis. And I'm using the term analysis extraordinarily loosely. And we have actually previously spoken about this. Oh, if inflation is up, that's bad. But if inflation is down, that's also bad, because it signals there might be a demand collapse. And either way, we're heading towards a recession. With most economic indicators taken to their extreme, you can argue that either very high or very low isn't good. But the new one on Fox is the jobs report might be too good. This could be bad for the economy, after spending a long time saying, where are the jobs, Joe Biden, and focusing on the labor participation rate. So let's look at a couple of screen captures from Fox News. First one, job gains spur concerns of rising inflation. So let's explore that. How does that work? Well, the more people that are working, the more people that have money to buy things. If more people want to buy the same limited number of things, you would expect that prices could go up. It's just there's more demand. So people selling stuff, if you've got 100 people who want to buy your sneakers, you're going to be able to charge more than if there's only one person who wants to buy your sneakers. Okay, there's a kernel of that there. But all of a sudden now the problem is the jobs numbers are too good. That's kind of weird, but it is Fox News. It is Maria Bartiromo, after all. Another headline, America's employment crisis. There are too many job openings. There's too many companies hiring compared to the number of people looking for jobs. And they put up that they call this a crisis. There's 11 million job openings, but there's only 6 million unemployed people. That's a crisis all of a sudden. Now, remember, when it's convenient to them, they say, well, the official number of unemployed workers doesn't reflect the real number, because you're only considered unemployed if you're actively looking for a job. If you are demoralized by not finding a job, you'd still like one, but you've just sort of given up. You're no longer considered unemployed. So the right loves to say that the real number of unemployed people is millions and millions higher than the official number, because you've got all these people working part-time who would like to be working full-time, and that's not reflected in the numbers. People who have just given up because they can't find a job. So now all of a sudden they don't mention that. Now they just say, hey, there's 11 million open jobs and 6 million unemployed workers. The other funny thing about this is they insist that immigrants, legal and illegal, are coming to the United States, taking all of our jobs and making it harder for the American-born worker to find a job. Well, if your new argument is that there's a shortfall of 5.5 million people, there's 5.5 million more jobs than people, wouldn't you want those immigrants to come in to work some of these jobs? So it's all completely and totally incoherent. Now, there's a real economic conversation to have here, and I'm glad to have it. It's not a partisan conversation, at least in principle, although the solutions that are often proposed become extraordinarily partisan. We've talked before. No matter what numbers there are with most indicators, you can make the case that at one extreme or the other, it could be bad for the economy. Now, sky is falling headlines get way more attention. The economists and the financial analysts who predict crashes get way more clicks than the people who say, hey, you know what? Things will probably be more or less okay over the medium term. When it comes to the inflation numbers, we've started to see a turnaround in the messaging from the right. The first messaging was, there's so much inflation, nobody can afford anything. This is a disaster for the economy because things are going to get so expensive. Nobody's going to buy stuff. That'll hurt businesses. The businesses will have to fire people. It's going to be a recession. Okay. As we now have seen gas prices decline for nearly a consecutive month, we talked about last week, as the jobs numbers continue to be really, really good, the new thing is, if inflation comes down and people all of a sudden now stop demanding stuff, and that's what's causing the inflation to go down, we are going to have potentially a deflationary spiral, a demand collapse, and that's going to be terrible because people aren't going to be buying stuff, and it'll be terrible for the economy. It's just the other side of the same coin when you look at prices and inflation to the extreme. The reality is pretty boring, okay? The reality is it's very rare, not impossible, but it's very rare to have a recession when you have such, you're so close to full employment. And we have a steady rate of inflation, which is slowly coming down. That's an important thing that's often not mentioned. Inflation has been high, and I'm not pretending that it hasn't been a problem. It's been a problem. Inflation has been high, but it's now for several months been quite steady. There's no escalating inflation where it's year over year. Well, look, it looks like it's about 8%. It's about 9%. It's 10%, 11%. It's 12%. It's been kind of steady at this high sevens, low eights number. And it's slowly likely going to start coming down. Recessions are not particularly common in that scenario where the employment situation looks good and businesses, generally speaking, are looking to hire and inflation is steady. Is it impossible that we would get a recession? No, it's not impossible, but it's not particularly likely. And that makes for pretty boring economic analysis. But it is the reality as the numbers point to so far. So the new one from Fox, the economy might be too good for its own good. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman. Let me know if this one surprises you. So a little later in today's show, we're going to talk about the 2022 midterm outlook, kind of looking into the 2024 election outlook. There's some interesting things going on already, interesting polling, interesting betting numbers, and a lot of different things. The context in which this happening is a series of increasingly unhinged candidates, many of them supported by the failed former president, Donald Trump. And one such example of what we're seeing, we saw this weekend as Donald Trump flew up to Anchorage, Alaska, to hold a rally really just in opposition to Lisa Murkowski. Lisa Murkowski is the current Alaska senator. She is a Republican, but she is a Republican that is not particularly deferential to Donald Trump. And if that's the case, Trump doesn't like you and Trump will try to get you booted out of office. And that's exactly what Donald Trump did in Alaska. He also had Sarah Palin, former vice presidential candidate and current congressional candidate, Sarah Palin, speak at the event. We're going to look at it. I will tell you, many of these clips are extraordinarily disturbing in how stupid they indicate the country has gotten. Now, one of the things Donald Trump did is he used the F word. And it's very cool, I guess, when you're a Republican to use the F word, even if you're a presidential candidate or a former president. Even though the Republican Party claims to be the party of civility and moral values and pro-family and Christianity and godliness and decency and character, they love the F-bomb. And just imagine, as you watch and listen to this clip, how would they have reacted if Barack Obama had dropped an F-bomb in a speech? I mean, remember, once Barack Obama didn't wear a suit jacket in the Oval Office and they went bonkers. Once Barack Obama put his feet up on the desk in the Oval Office and they said, this is such a disgrace. And here it's very different. Here they cheer it and they love it.
Sir, I'd hit him on the left. I'd hit him on the right. I'd hit him in the f-ing center, sir. Right.
That's pretty cool, right? When the president swears, it's very relatable and he's a man of the people and all of this stuff. Now, maybe the epitome of the cult moment, we've talked many times, this is a cult. There's no question that this is the cult. They deify Trump in a way that is completely cult-like, but this is maybe the epitome. Starting with a glitch, Trump tried to start his conclusion, which he always does by saying in conclusion. And he almost said in collusion. He glitched very badly, one of these brain glitches. And in order to cover it, he immediately aborted the teleprompter read and started talking about a couple, or it might be a son and it might be a mother and son, or it might be a couple. I genuinely can't tell what it is. Who were wearing shirts that have Trump's face all over them. He talked about how he wants their shirt, and they, I guess he was kind of kidding, but they quite literally took their shirts off. These are the shirts they wore. They took them off to give the shirt to Trump. So this all starts with Trump glitching badly on In Conclusion, and it goes downhill very quickly. And look at the cultish nature of this.
I love this guy's shirt, I tell you. No, I'd love to have you get up here. Come on, get up here. Let me see. Get up here. Get this guy up here. Come here. I love this guy. Any guy wears a shirt like that, how can you not love him? Look at that beautiful. Yeah. Would you help him up? Taylor, help him up. Come on, you're a strong guy. Come here. I just want to.
And you'll notice that as these people come up, they look visibly disoriented by what's going on.
I like that one. I want this shirt. I'm going to wear it to the next rally.
Now, you and I can tell that's a joke, but they end up taking their shirts off.
I want it.
And honestly, if you're only listening, you're probably better off, because the cringe in what we're seeing here is bizarre.
Thank you. I want that shirt.
All right. So moments later, they actually did take their shirts off, and we have an image of these individuals, and the image has not been photoshopped. They took their shirts off, and it is the epitome of the cult moment. Back to some more substantial things. Donald Trump is now afraid to even use the word vaccine. This is very interesting. In this next clip, Donald Trump tries to take credit for the things he did during the pandemic. And one of the things Trump loves to take credit for is the vaccine. He doesn't actually say the word. He says we did it much faster than they said we would, but he doesn't say vaccine because his audience is so anti-vax.
We did a hell of a job. Never got credit for that. More people died under Biden. You saw that. And the job we did with COVID, or as some people call it, to be more accurate, the China virus. But we did so much in terms of therapeutics, and a word that I'm not allowed to mention, but I'm still proud of that word.
He's not allowed to mention it, but he's proud of it.
Because we did it. We did that. We did that in 9 months, and it was supposed to take 5 years to 12 years. Nobody else could have done it, but I'm not mentioning it in front of my people. But
that's interesting. He's conceding if he uses the word vaccine in front of his people, they will boo. But that thing we did in months instead of years. Another moment. This is a classic Trump always trying to be relatable. So he will mention places in the state where he's speaking. Here he says, let's go to Inside Passage.
The slopes of Denali to the waters of Glacier Bay. That's a beautiful place. And from the forests of the interior to the majestic vistas of the Inside Passage. Does anybody know the Inside Passage? Anybody want to go there tonight?
Right.
What a beautiful name, the Inside. Let's go to the Inside Passage tonight, right?
You can tell Trump really familiar with the state of Alaska based on that. A number of verbal misfires here. He referred to the newest Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson as Kachangi.
She voted to approve Joe Biden's radical left justice, Kachangi Brown Jackson, the most far left justice in history.
Arguably the most qualified justice in history. Another misfire, just a very glitchy evening for Trump. Trump trying to say Elon Musk, and he says Leon, and it all goes downhill.
Leon, I tell you what, Elon,
right,
is not going to buy Twitter. Where did you hear that before? Leon, I tell you what.
Leon. And then lastly, now a staple of these rallies, the overt, crass, transphobic portion of the speech.
We will also keep men out of women's sports.
Major issue.
Right? The swimmer. The young swimmer, she wanted to break that record. 1/16th of a second, she was going to do it. And she looked over and she said hello to people that she's grown up with. She's seen them. She's a top swimmer. She looks left and she sees them. Hi, hi. You know, they hate each other, but they're, you know, they're competing. Hi, hi. They hate her. She hates them. That's the way life goes, right? Then she looks over, waves, and then she sees this guy.
Oof.
They say, I mean, this is supposed to be a technically correct term, a person with a man's body, okay? It's a man's body. So they see this person with a man's body, and he's a giant. He's a big guy. It's wingspan.
I'm not even going to do the rest of it because it's so overtly crass and horrifying, but that is now a staple of these events. So Alaska, a rally in Alaska, everything going horribly wrong, and then it became Sarah Palin's opportunity to speak, and let's talk about that next. Do you remember that quaint era in American politics in 2008? Where we thought Sarah Palin is the craziest that anyone involved in politics will be. Sarah Palin is the wackiest. Sarah Palin is the most cartoonish and ignorant and unqualified. We're never going to see anything below Sarah Palin. And of course, we were very wrong. And then came Trump and Trumpism and a bevy of candidates worse than Sarah Palin. But Sarah Palin has gotten even worse over the last couple of decades. Sarah Palin is now running for member of Congress in Alaska. She was invited to speak both before Trump at the Trump rally in Anchorage and during. And it was really, really weird. Sarah Palin called on Alaskan chicks to show people what makes them women. Now, if you've looked at, you know, maybe certain medical journals lately, the question of showing what makes you a woman is an interesting thing to demand women do, but that's what Sarah Palin did. Check it out.
To our leaders not being able to tell us they don't know what a woman is? Hey, all you Alaskan chicks out there, maybe you can show them, tell them what a real woman is.
Yeah. Show everybody how you know that you're a woman. A very, very strange request. Then Sarah Palin was invited up during Trump's speech to speak, almost completely incoherent. Now, we've talked before. Sometimes Sarah Palin really struggles to use words and then to combine them and to try to communicate things of meaning. This is maybe the worst I've ever seen her.
A lot of people asked me, how did you know that you know that President Trump, that Donald J. Trump was going to be the best president that we'd ever had? How did you think to get out there and endorse him early when, gosh, you know, there was a lot of party pressure on me and others to endorse, you know, established candidates and all that? And I knew, well, personally speaking, for years...
Even Trump is confused by this, and he'll accept any praise, but this, he's like, what is she talking about?
Donald Trump watched what the fake media, the fake news, the lamestream media put my kids through, okay?
Right.
Remember this? The things that you guys did to my kids.
By the way, the pointing to the back, nobody's covering these rallies. It's basically Newsmax, Right Side Broadcasting. And if I don't have anything better going on, I'll cover their coverage. There's not whatever they think of as the fake news media. There's none of it there. Nobody's even talking about these things.
Donald Trump, he would write me a note and he would say, hang in there. The people who know you, they love you. They know the truth about your family sitting right over there. God bless you. Hi, Trig.
Right.
And I knew that this man about family.
Yeah, Trump really a deeply spiritual and also really a family man. At another point, Sarah Palin suggested that the right not retreat, but rather reload, which is really a great message when we're plagued by mass shootings.
My dad, no, he was all about, no, you stiffen your spine. You use what they throw at you as fuel.
Let it strengthen and fortify you. And you fight for what is right. Well, my dad's words exactly were, don't retreat, reload.
Now that's a message the crowd can get behind. Thinly veiled allusions to violence at a time during which we are plagued by mass shootings. A couple other real quick ones. In this segment, Sarah Palin discusses Donald Trump's balls.
Out of all of them, because I knew them all, he was the only one who had the balls to take on the fake media, fake news, and to take on Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, Clinton. And lastly, Sarah Palin, during her speech, using the term plandemic, which, of course, is a buzzword for the utter bottom feeding worst of the worst COVID conspiracy theorists.
This is life changing. What's coming up here in the midterms, the change that are needed. And it's no longer Democrat versus Republican. Mm. This is all about control versus freedom. It's good versus evil. It is a spiritual battle. They use the plandemic as an example in order to achieve a goal of controlling you.
The plandemic. So this now is welcomed by what has become the mainstream of the Republican Party, Trumpism. And later in the show, or maybe tomorrow if I don't get to it, we are going to take a deep look at polling data. Is Trumpism currently dominant in the Republican Party? It's an important question in thinking about these midterms and about 2024. We're going to take a quick break. All of these clips, if you are just listening today and you have a sort of morbid, sick curiosity as to what it looked like, we will have these clips on our Instagram at David Pakman Show. And then after the break, we'll look at a couple of interviews with rally goers. And I will warn you, it's just as bad or worse than Sarah Palin. All right. So we're going to kind of close our coverage of this wacky weekend in Alaska. We looked at the Trump rally. We looked at Sarah Palin. We're now going to look at some interviews with rally attendees. And one of the things we realized was that Trump supporters in Alaska are just as delusional and just as disconnected from reality as those in other parts of the country. Alaska often gets this reputation, sort of like Vermont, of being a different type of place where left and right don't mean the same things and the Republicans are more reasonable and the liberals are more conservative and, you know, all these different things because of its rural and all these stuff. Maybe to some degree that's true. And in fact, I think it is true to some degree, but no shortage of whacked out, delusional participants, I guess, in the political system. Here, some women are asked, what are the main issues that are of concern to you? The main political issues, women in Alaska, what are you worried about? I'm not going to preview what they say. Let's listen to what they say.
What's the most important issue that you guys are concerned about as Alaska? Oh, Space Force. All right.
QR healing, the support of our veterans, the healing.
I'm sorry?
Trafficking.
Specifically, what kind of trafficking?
Human trafficking.
Are you worried about our southern border?
Yes, everything. I think eventually they'll end up going back to their own countries with Nassar, Jassar kicking in.
Right. Now, there's a lot there. So the main issues for women in Alaska, conservative women, principled conservative women, are Space Force, which is doing nothing right now. QR codes killing people, I think is what she said. Veterans. Okay, veterans. Healing. Healing's great, but from what and in what way? Trafficking and the southern border of the United States, which is quite removed both geographically and politically from what's happening in Alaska. Alaska, of course, sharing a border with Canada. These are the issues that they say are the most important. Now, at the end, you might have heard that this woman mentions Nassara and Jassara.
Going back to their own countries with Nassara, Jassara kicking in.
Okay. When that, I watched that on Saturday during our stream. I didn't know what on earth this woman was talking about. Nassara is an acronym for the National Economic Security and Recovery Act. These were some proposed economic reforms suggested during the 1990s by a guy named Harvey Francis Barnard, who wanted to replace the income tax with a national sales tax and get rid of compound interest on secured loans and go back to a currency backed by two types of precious metal, you know, all these different things. And it's kind of become a cult-like thing. And the idea that people are going to go back to Mexico because of Nassar, I mean, it is so out there that even many conspiracy theorists have no idea what it's about. So that's what women in Alaska say they care about. Here's a guy who is sort of a medical marvel. Listen to this guy's voice. He seems to have something in his throat, not his mouth, not his nose, but his throat. I've never heard someone speak like this in an extended way. I asked some doctor friends of mine, what exactly is going on here? They said they don't know. What you're about to hear is defying the medical knowledge of multiple doctors. Check this out.
Look what he did for us. I mean, come on, man. He's a businessman. He shows them people up.
I can't even pretend to speak that way.
They don't know where they're at because he knows the ins and outs of business. He got all of our prices down, our taxes down, our gas down, our food down. The man's a dream.
Now, not only did Trump not do any of those things, I tried holding water in my mouth to try to sound like that. I tried sort of like speaking through a gargle. I could not replicate that. And what a wild, wild day in Anchorage, Alaska. So the supporters also crediting Trump with things he didn't do, imagining new conspiracy. I mean, it just completely all over the place. And we have to remember, some of these people vote, not all of them. Some of them show up at these rallies. They travel all over going to rallies and they say they're devoted to Trump. They're like, no, I was working that day, or I wasn't working. I was just doing nothing and I didn't go and vote. This group of folks will determine who controls the House and Senate after January of 2023 based on how they vote this November. So wild, but not to be ignored as a political constituency. All right. Absolute last thing on the wacky weekend in Anchorage, Alaska, the asinine Anchorage, Alaska weekend. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell did show up at the rally. He claimed that votes were stolen from Donald Trump in Alaska. Now, I know English is my second language, but votes were stolen from Donald Trump sounds wacky. And it also sounds untrue. Trump won in Alaska, by the way.
You all know here in Alaska, over 29,000 votes were stolen from Donald Trump.
Oh, God. I mean, it's Saturday Night Live is going to be out of business.
You all know here in Alaska, over 29,000 votes were stolen from Donald Trump.
Right.
So it happened everywhere in our country. And as you all know, I've said it, we have to get rid of the machines and the voting machines.
Right.
We're doing a class action lawsuit against all machines.
Now, remember that in Alaska, Donald Trump won easily in 2020, 52-42. Very, very easy win. But Pillow is convinced votes were stolen from Donald Trump. And then lastly, I know at this point it's indistinguishable from satire, but Mike Pillow has a new date for Donald Trump being reinstated, and it's next month. It's about 5-6 weeks away, either August 20th or 21st. It will be the biggest thing in our lifetimes. And it might be what gets Donald Trump finally reinstated.
This is so exciting because this is all going to lead up, everybody, to, and I've got to say this, August 20th and 21st, the biggest event this country in our lifetime. I believe it's the most important event in our lifetime. What this is going to do, this will be in Springfield, Missouri, live streamed right to the world.
The natural place, of course, for the biggest event of our lifetimes. I mean, no offense to Springfield, Missouri, but surprising, certainly, that that's where the biggest event is going to take place.
And it's a two-day event. It's invite only. You guys will be there.
Yeah, you said that. It's an invite only. And, so it's in Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah, Springfield, Missouri. It's so important. There'll be, if you know, the invites will be going out. These will be influencers, podcasters, grassroots. It'll be church leaders, okay? And when we do this, everybody, imagine every state will be getting up there saying, you know, here's our footprint. You're all going to hear what the good is going. Where's our hope, you know? Yep. And then the next day will be everything of what each state can do individually to get to.
Yep. So very, very clear. It's going to be an incredible August 20th and 21st. Now, you guys may or may not remember, but Mike Pillow, during my interview with him, actually said I could go to his symposium if I wanted. He referred to it as the symposium. But I think it was a cyber symposium. He said if I wanted to go to that, I could. He gave me his personal cell phone number. Maybe, I mean, I know that there's so many church leaders that are going to be there that they might not have room for me. But should I contact Pillow and say, sir, I'd love to go to the biggest event of our lifetimes and check out what's going to go on and how every state is going to do this? Or maybe I'll just stay home. I don't know. Let me know what you think I should do. So that closes the loop on this wild and wacky weekend, Asinine Anchorage, Alaska rally. Not particularly full. It was a 5,000-seat venue whose upper deck was not completely sold out. There were actually seats everywhere. So I know it's Alaska and there's not that many people there, so maybe that's what's to blame. Maybe the glisten and shine of Trump is receding. Actually, Trump was glistening a lot, but he was sweating on Saturday night. We will look at the data coming up soon. So that does it on this topic for today. We're going to take a quick break. We are going to review an absolute clinic, masterclass by Pete Buttigieg on Fox News over the weekend. We're going to talk about these boring gun talking points being shut down by Senator Dick Durbin. We have a lot still to come. Facebook.com/David Pakman Show. Make sure you give us a like, and we will be right back. I have a great clip today of Pete Buttigieg just crushing a mayonnaise-brained Fox News host who tries to do the same old thing to Mayor Pete, who is now Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg. So here's the kind of setup. As many of you know, or may have heard, Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh recently had to deal with protesters at a restaurant. And in the aftermath of this and Brett Kavanaugh leaving through the back door, people started talking about the right to have dinner at restaurants and the right to privacy and all of these crazy things in the context of what's happening with abortion laws and the fact that there have been protests at abortion clinics, family planning clinics that provide abortion services for so long, and they are intimidatory and predatory against women who just want to go and get procedures done. It's a medical location. The contrast is unbelievable, truly. And in the midst of this, Pete Buttigieg's husband put out a tweet talking about, oh, you know, right to privacy and kind of poking fun at the absurdity and the double standard of these right wingers. So Mayor Pete goes on Fox News and the host tries to pull the whole, is it appropriate for the husband of a, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Pete Buttigieg puts on a clinic, truly excellent. We've talked about his skills before. It's hard to find a time where he goes on Fox News and doesn't humiliate the host and the entire apparatus of Fox News. So let's just jump into it and we'll talk about it as we watch it.
Your husband tweeted after Justice Brett Kavanaugh left a Washington restaurant due to protesters. The tweet reads, sounds like he just wanted some privacy to make his own dining decisions.
Whoa.
Is that appropriate, sir?
Look, when public officials go into public life, we should expect two things. One, you should always be free from violence, harassment, and intimidation.
True.
And two, you're never going to be free from criticism or peaceful protest, people exercising their First Amendment rights.
Okay.
And that's what happened in this case. Remember, the justice never even came into contact with these protesters. They reportedly didn't.
That's an important thing. He became aware that they were out front and he left through the back door.
See or hear them, And these protesters are upset because a right, an important right, that the majority of Americans support was taken away.
Understood.
Not only the right to choose, by the way, but this justice was part of the process of stripping away the right to privacy. As long as I've been alive, settled case law in the United States.
And listen to the Fox host trying to interject.
Has been that the Constitution protected a right to privacy, and that has now been thrown out the window by justices, including Justice Kavanaugh, who, as I recall, swore up and down in front of God and everyone, including the United States Congress, that they were going to leave settled case law alone. So, yes, people are upset. They're going to exercise their First Amendment rights. And as long as that's peaceful, that's protected. Compare that, for example, to the reality that as a country right now, we're reckoning with the fact that a mob summoned by the former president.
All right, well, let me follow up, Mr.
Secretary. Don't make that. Don't go into that direction, Pete, please.
United States Capitol for the purpose of overthrowing the election and very nearly succeeded in preventing the peaceful transfer power. But I think common sense can tell the difference.
But as a high-profile public figure, sir.
What's funny is Pete spent 90 seconds explaining why the question is ridiculous, and the host just basically repeats the question.
Are you comfortable with protesters protesting when you and your husband go to dinner at a restaurant?
Protesting peacefully outside in a public space? Sure. Look, I can't even tell you the number of spaces, venues, and scenarios where I've been protested. And the bottom line is this. Any public figure should always, always be free from violence, intimidation, and harassment, but should never be free from criticism or people exercising their First Amendment rights.
Pete Buttigieg is really, really good at this. And these are the types of things where this plays well, you know, tens of millions of views in the kind of online sphere, YouTube and Twitter, et cetera. But the bigger issue is lots of people are never exposed to these types of confrontations of the absurdity of the arguments they're making. It's okay to protest outside an abortion clinic where women are making medical decisions and receiving treatment and grappling with difficult decisions. But Morton's Steakhouse out front while Kavanaugh's inside and doesn't even come into contact with the protesters, we're supposed to believe that that is in some way unacceptable. And with all of these things, all of the tone policing and decorum, there are major double standards. We talked about one earlier on in the show. Barack Obama was regularly criticized for these little tiny meaningless things. Oh, he took off his suit jacket in the Oval Office. He wore a tan suit at a serious event. He put his feet up on the desk at the White House. And Trump drops an F-bomb while attacking his political opponents at his rally in Anchorage over the weekend. And it's not just that the crowd doesn't mind. They cheer. They celebrate the fact that Trump is swearing, by their logic, very unbecoming of a former president. So a lot of people I know are saying, well, David, what if this happened to you? This has happened to me. I mean, I there have been people at events that I've done who were in the room and got, this was a while ago, and they stood up and they tried to kind of take over the event by asking these attack sort of questions to the point where the organizers said, hey, guy, okay, that's good. You've made your point. We're now moving on. At a restaurant, I believe it was last summer, I told the story of an anti-Semitic confrontation, and it was not someone coming up to me and saying, hey, you know, David, I know your show, and I disagree with you about your take on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and I'd love to talk to you about my perspective. That would be fine. Let me have my dinner, and then we can talk about that. No, it was a screaming imperialist Jew bastard at me from across the room while I'm with my friends having dinner. And hey, you know what? It's not comfortable, but what is the argument that it's illegal, or what exactly is it that they are saying? Oh, well, it's the appropriateness of the husband of the Secretary of Transportation supporting protesters who Kavanaugh never even came into contact. Come on, guys, give me a break. And so Pete doing an excellent job. He would be, again, I'm talking here about optics and skill. He would be a very reasonable presidential candidate. Now more well-known than he was last time around. I find him very interesting, highly skilled, and he did an excellent job there. Let's now look at another example from Fox News from over the weekend. Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat, appeared on Fox News. and he represents Illinois. So he was understandably asked about this horrific mass shooting in Highland Park. Highland Park is a swanky suburb of Chicago. It is not Chicago. And the host, much like with Pete Buttigieg, same host, by the way, tries these tired, repetitive talking points and says, hey, if it's all about gun laws, Chicago has really strict gun laws. Why was there a shooting in Chicago if there are strict gun laws? And of course, the shooting wasn't in Chicago. And Dick Durbin, visibly just exhausted by this tired line of questioning.
Highland Park before this is over.
To be fair, though, if it were just about gun laws, wouldn't Chicago, with some of the toughest gun laws in the country, be a safer city?
Let me tell you something quickly. Highland Park is not Chicago. It's a suburb of Chicago, a Understood. Small town, a great small town. It's the first place you would have chosen to go to a 4th of July parade with your son or grandson or granddaughter. It's a wonderful community. And to say, oh, Chicago is so dangerous. Yes, it's dangerous, but so is St. Louis. And so are towns, Jackson, Mississippi, and others have a murder rate as well. It's the fact that we've proliferated so many guns. The police that I sit down with privately on a regular basis say, Senator, you just don't have any idea how many guns are out there. And they're so easily accessible. Now, the gun industry's made a lot of money out of this, but America is not safer because of it.
So listen, oh wait, hold on.
Let me be clear. I want to express my heartfelt condolences to the people of Highland Park. And-
right, yes. Other than just attacking everything, we do feel bad for the victims. The Fox host gets on the record there. So there's like three different things here, okay? First of all, Highland Park is not Chicago. Dick Durbin doing a good job of pointing that out. And the idea that, oh, it's urban gun violence. Highland Park is like a swanky, it's your prototypical wealthy suburb of sorts. And there's lots of, you know, the suburb, in a sense, originated in the suburban Chicago area. And it's your prototypical suburb. It was not in Chicago. It was close, though. Second layer, this whole thing of the dangerous cities run by Democrats. Democrats are more likely to live in cities than Republicans. And so cities tend to be run by Democrats, safe cities and unsafe cities. In addition, there are lots of cities, lots. There are, you know, 10 notable cities run by Republicans that are not particularly safe cities, and they never want to talk about that. But the third layer that I want to mention, again, is from dangerous Chicago to Gary, Indiana, where the gun laws are much more relaxed. It's a 40-minute drive. There's even public transit. As terrible as public transit is in this country, you can get on a bus and go from Chicago to Gary in under an hour. So does it really matter that in Chicago there are on paper strict gun laws where you can just go 40 minutes and get your guns in Indiana? Case in point, Highland Park, Illinois, there's a place in Hammond, Indiana called Deb's Gun Range. Okay, Deb's Gun Range is a big, big gun shop. It's an 80-minute drive from Highland Park, Illinois, to Deb's Gun Range in Hammond, Indiana, where you can get your guns. Do Chicago area gun laws really matter when in nearby Indiana, people sell their weapons to other people without background checks or paperwork even recording the sale? This is such tired old nonsense. And Dick Durbin, he got a piece of it right. And of course, they throw it in the last minute. And they go, we got to run. But listen, if the gun laws mattered, then why did this happen in Chicago? It's like, well, it wasn't Chicago and Indiana's 35 minutes away and on and on and on. And it does not matter because these are the talking points that the Fox News audience wants to see. They want to see and hear this pablum to make them feel good about doing nothing about guns. That's the whole point of all of this. And we should be sick of it. I'm sick of it. We should have change. And the only hope here is that this decided effort from the right to do nothing about guns does seem to be shifting the balance of how people plan to vote in November against Republicans. The Roe v. Wade decision seems to be part of it. Doing nothing about gun safety seems to be part of it. Let's see what happens in November. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Now, this voicemail is part of a bigger thing that happened. Over the weekend, there was this Trump rally in Anchorage, Alaska. I covered the rally. We had a nice audience, 15,000-16,000 live viewers on a random Saturday night. Nice audience. Lots of people who don't like me and who don't like leftism stumbled across my live stream. And they felt furious in an entitled way, where they spent the last 2 days writing to me saying, why are you interrupting the great President Trump with your commentary? One guy even said I should leave the country or something. And here's another caller who really didn't like the fact that I covered the Trump rally the way I wanted to cover it, as if you couldn't just find another stream.
You know, it's painful to watch your show because I'm trying to watch the Trump rally and all you're doing is talking over it.
Right.
Making snide comments. Why don't you shut the f*** up and let us listen?
Okay. Watch it somewhere else. Watch it somewhere else. You don't have to listen to me. You don't have to watch my stream. I'm doing my commentary. And the level of entitlement from people saying, I shouldn't be speaking over the president. Just let him tell his lies unchallenged. I'll do it the way I want to do it. And even, by the way, maybe not surprisingly, xenophobic and anti-Semitic responses to the fact that I had the audacity to speak over the great orange anointed one. Give me a break, guys. I'll do the show the way I want to do the show. You can watch somewhere else if you don't like it. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. Joe Biden says he is considering declaring a health emergency over abortion access. And we're going to talk about what that means and what might be the result of doing that. A pregnant woman in Texas was pulled over in the carpool lane and she made the argument, and I believe it's a good argument. Listen, based on the law, I have a person in my belly right now. And so therefore I should be able to use the carpool lane. And of course, this is the kind of silliest example of the absurdity of the right-wing personhood arguments. I've said before, listen, if it's a person, if the fetus is a person, it should have citizenship. If the fetus is a person, it should be entitled to child support, etc. And they don't want to do any of that. But here's another just glaring example of this absurdity. Why can't you be in the carpool lane if that's a person in the womb? So we will talk about that. And then number three, there is a new law in Arizona seeking to limit the recording of interactions with police. We're going to talk about the First Amendment legal community saying you can't do that. That's actually, you know, for all the times that the right loves to say that, what about my First Amendment? What about my free speech? They don't know what the hell they're talking about. We have an actual First Amendment issue here, which we will discuss on the bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com. Get instant access to the bonus show. And of course, you can use the coupon code BIGVOTING22 to get yourselves a discount. We're here all week, unless anything changes. And look forward to seeing you tomorrow or on the bonus.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
WRCT. In sound. From way out.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
People will not leave the president's house, the president's office or temple trees, the prime minister's official residence, until leaders officially announce their resignations. If they don't leave on the 13th, what will happen is that the people will decide to storm wherever they are hiding now.
Thousands of protesters stormed the Sri Lankan president and prime minister's homes, refusing to leave until they officially resign. will go to Colombo to speak with one of the protesters. Then the Pentagon authorizes another $400 million for the fight in Ukraine, bringing total U.S. security spending on Ukraine under President Biden to some $8 billion. We'll speak with Joe Loria, editor-in-chief of Consortium News, about the pressure on independent media to follow a single approved narrative on the Ukraine war.
The mainstream media has been, in many ways, whitewashing the causes and the historical context of the war, which in no way justifies what has happened in Ukraine. However, because we have reported that, we've become subject to reviews and attacks by government-linked organizations, including NewsGuard and PayPal, has shut us down. And we've also had British government officials looking into us. So this is a very chilling moment for free press, I believe.
And as calls grow for President Biden to declare a public health emergency to ensure access to abortion after the Supreme Court overturned Roe, we'll get an update from two leading abortion providers in southern states.
Alabama was the first state to pass a complete, total, no exceptions abortion ban. Then it was one of the first states to close all of its doors once the Supreme Court decision came down and overturned Roe v. Wade. Now we're expecting it to be the first state where people are going to test what does it mean to aid and abet somebody when getting an abortion.
We'll speak with Robin Marty, author of the new handbook for post-Roe America. She's operations director of the West Alabama Women's Center, which just reopened Monday. And with Diane Derzis, CEO of Jackson Women's Health Organization, the clinic at the center of the Supreme Court case that overturned Roe, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Ukraine, the death toll from a Russian rocket attack Sunday on an apartment block in the Donetsk town of Chasiv Yar has risen to 33. Rescue crews pulled 9 survivors from the wreckage. Let's see if there's more right now on what's happening. Rescue crews pulled the 9 survivors elsewhere in Ukraine. Ukraine says 5 people were killed, including 2 children, and dozens more injured after Russian shells fell on Kharkiv. In Washington, D.C., the Biden administration accused Russia of turning to Iran with a request for hundreds of weapons-capable drones for use in Ukraine. In Kyiv, the Communist Party of Ukraine and other left parties report they've been banned and had their assets seized under a decree by President Volodymyr Zelensky, prohibiting political parties deemed to be pro-Russian. In Moscow, President Putin said he would expedite the procedure for Ukrainians to obtain Russian citizenship. Ukrainian officials condemned the move, calling it an encroachment on Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. On Monday, a top Ukrainian official said some 7,200 military personnel are missing and unaccounted for, though most are believed to be in Russian captivity. We'll get the latest on the war in Ukraine later in the broadcast. The Biden administration said Monday U.S. physicians must provide abortions if a pregnant person is experiencing a medical emergency and their life is at risk. In a letter to federal health agencies, Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra said doctors who offer the procedure in states with abortion bans would be protected under the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, which is federal law. Becerra warned hospitals and physicians who refused to provide abortions under these circumstances would face the loss of Medicare funding and financial support from other state health programs. In Michigan, reproductive justice advocates have formally submitted over 700